Why do you care so much about what others think? It's a question that feels simple on the surface. Yet if you stop and really look, you'll notice how deeply it shapes almost every decision you make. From the clothes you wear to the career you choose, from the things you post online to the way you speak in a group of friends, so much of life is filtered through an invisible lens of expectation. We fear rejection, we dread judgment, we crave belonging and applause. But what if the very thing you are most afraid of, being disliked, mocked, even hated, wasn't actually a tragedy, but the first step toward genuine freedom? What if the cost of living authentically has always been the willingness to disappoint others? This question is not new. Across history, some of the boldest thinkers and most radical outsiders wrestled with it and came to the same conclusion. Freedom does not come from winning approval, it comes from letting it go. The cynics of ancient Greece, led by figures like Diogenes, made it their mission to live in defiance of society's standards. They wore poverty like armor, mocked kings to their faces, and refused to play along with the game of status and reputation. To them, every approval seeker was a slave, shackled not by chains but by opinions. And centuries later, the existentialist philosophers of the modern age, Sartre, Kierkegaard, Camus, picked up the same theme in their own way. They looked at a world without clear meaning or divine authority and said, "You are free, whether you like it or not." And with that freedom comes a terrifying choice. Either live honestly, even if you are hated for it, or hide behind the crowd's approval and never truly exist at all. To live without approval is not just a philosophical idea, it is a dangerous act. It means giving up the safety of conformity, the comfort of being liked, and the reassurance of blending in. It means facing the possibility of standing alone, of being misunderstood, of paying a price for your independence. But within that danger lies something precious: authenticity. The chance to wake up each day knowing you are not playing a role, not bowing to the crowd, not betraying yourself for the applause of others. It is a difficult path, but it is the only one that leads to real freedom. This journey, away from approval and toward authenticity, is what we'll be exploring. The raw defiance of the cynics, the heavy responsibility described by the existentialists, and the timeless struggle between living for others and living for yourself. Each of these thinkers faced the same human trap you face today, the pull to belong at the cost of being real. And each of them left behind insights, warnings, and stories that remind us, if you want to be free, you must be willing to be disliked. That is the dangerous freedom we're about to step into. From the very beginning of human history, approval has been tied to survival. Thousands of years ago, being accepted by your tribe wasn't just a matter of pride, it was the difference between life and death. To be cast out from the group meant losing protection, food, shelter, and the shared safety that came with numbers. In that environment, rejection wasn't just emotionally painful, it was fatal. Our ancestors learned that to avoid rejection, they needed to adapt, to conform, to mirror the behaviors that would keep them in good standing. Over countless generations, this need for approval carved itself into our psychology. Even today, in a world where exile no longer means being eaten by wild animals, our nervous system reacts to social rejection as though our very survival is at stake. A harsh word, a dismissive look, or a cold shoulder can ignite the same alarm bells as physical danger. That ancient fear has never left us. It's why public speaking is so terrifying for so many people. It's not the speaking itself, but the thought of standing in front of the tribe and risking their judgment. It's why, even as adults, people can feel the sting of disapproval from parents or peers, long after they've left home. Our biology has wired us to equate disapproval with danger, even when our rational mind knows we are safe. This wiring explains why so many of our daily choices, what we wear, how we speak, what we share, are not made freely, but under the invisible pressure of imagined eyes watching us. The problem is that in the modern world, this ancient survival instinct has been hijacked by systems that profit from our insecurity. Social media thrives on the dopamine rush of approval and the fear of rejection. Every like, every comment, every follower count is a tiny measure of acceptance. And because those numbers are visible to everyone, they become a scoreboard of social value. People begin to live for the next notification, as though their worth rises and falls with each click. But beneath this lies a hidden prison. If your self-esteem is tied to likes, then you are never free. You are shackled to the unpredictable whims of strangers. You create not what you believe in, but what you think will be approved of. Your life becomes a performance, rehearsed and polished, but no longer real. It isn't just social media. The approval trap weaves itself into nearly every structure of modern life. In the workplace, careers are often shaped less by passion and more by the hierarchy of status and recognition. People accept jobs they hate, work overtime for bosses they resent, and sacrifice health and family for titles that signal approval. Success becomes less about inner fulfillment and more about external validation. What looks good on a resume, what earns applause in a meeting, what impresses colleagues at a networking event. The individual is lost, while the mass grows stronger. Family, too, becomes a powerful arena for the approval trap. From childhood, we are rewarded for being good and punished for stepping outside the lines. Those early experiences leave deep marks. Many adults live not for themselves, but in an unending quest to please parents or to live up to inherited expectations. It might be the pressure to pursue a respectable career, to marry at a certain age, or to maintain traditions that no longer hold meaning. And even when parents are long gone, the voices linger inside, whispering disapproval at every independent step. This creates an inner cage, the fear that by living honestly you will disappoint the people whose approval you've been trained to chase. All of this creates what can be called the approval prison. It is invisible, but powerful. You may feel like you are making choices freely, but if you examine them closely, you'll often find they are not your own. You may think you are choosing a career, but in reality, you're choosing the one that earns the right nods from family and society. You may think you are posting a photo because you like it, but really you are tailoring it for likes. You may think you are in control, but the truth is, your self-worth is being outsourced to others, dependent on their applause. And as long as that is true, you are not free. The philosopher Soren Kierkegaard once wrote, "The crowd is untruth." What he meant was that the mass opinion of society often hides reality rather than reveals it. When you base your life on what the crowd thinks, you are living in untruth. You are shaped by illusions, not by your own essence. The crowd praises conformity, but conformity kills individuality. The crowd rewards safety, but safety often smothers growth. Kierkegaard's warning is clear. If you let the crowd define you, you will never meet yourself. You will spend your life as a shadow of what others expect, never as the person you truly are. Think about the difference between chasing likes and living truthfully. Imagine two writers. The first writes only what she knows will trend online, carefully sculpting every word for approval. Her work gets applause, but it is hollow. She never risks her soul on the page. The second writes what she truly believes, even if it's unpopular, even if it earns criticism. She may not gather as many fans, but her words carry authenticity, and in them, she feels alive. The first is praised but imprisoned. The second is vulnerable but free. This is the same choice each of us faces in our own lives, whether we are writers or not. The trap of approval feels safe, but it's a cage lined with velvet. It whispers to us that if we keep everyone happy, If we never offend, if we stay within the lines, we will be loved. And sometimes, we are. But that love is fragile. It lasts only as long as we keep performing. Step outside the role, and the approval vanishes. Real love, real respect, real selfhood can only emerge when we stop bargaining for applause and start living from within. The crowd will call it dangerous, and perhaps it is. But the greater danger is to waste a life in the comfort of a prison you never dared to leave. Freedom sounds beautiful at first. We all say we want it. Freedom to live how we want, freedom to make our own choices, freedom to escape the expectations of others. But when you stop and really consider what freedom means, you realize it isn't just a gift, it's a heavy weight. True freedom is terrifying because it strips away excuses. If no one else is in control, if no external authority dictates your life, then the responsibility rests entirely on your shoulders. You cannot hide behind tradition or God or society or family. Every choice is yours. Every consequence is yours. And with that realization comes not comfort, but fear. Jean-Paul Sartre, one of the central voices of existentialist philosophy, captured this in his famous line, "Man is condemned to be free." Condemned because freedom is not optional. It's not something you can choose to avoid. Even if you surrender to the crowd, even if you obey blindly, even if you try to bury your individuality under layers of conformity, you are still making a choice. There's no escape from freedom. To be human is to be faced with decisions every day, from the small to the life-changing, and to know that no one else can make them for you. You might hope that a rulebook or tradition will tell you what to do, but in the end, you are still the one who must decide whether or not to follow it. This is why Sartre called it a condemnation. We are thrown into a world without a script and yet forced to act. This realization brings with it an unsettling feeling that Soren Kierkegaard described as the dizziness of freedom. Imagine standing at the edge of a cliff. You feel the fear of falling, but you also feel the strange awareness that you could jump if you wanted to. That open possibility, the terrifying awareness that nothing is stopping you, is the same sensation freedom brings to the human soul. Kierkegaard saw this anxiety not as a flaw, but as a fundamental part of existence. To be alive is to stand before the vast openness of possibility and feel both wonder and dread. And because this anxiety is so uncomfortable, many people try to escape it. They run back into the arms of the crowd, into ready-made answers, into approval. They would rather have others decide for them than face the dizzying responsibility of freedom. Albert Camus took this insight even further when he spoke about the absurd. For Camus, life itself has no clear meaning handed down from the heavens. The universe is silent, indifferent, and yet we hunger for answers. This creates what he called the absurd, the clash between our desire for meaning and the universe's refusal to provide it. Faced with this absurdity, people often turn to illusions. Religions, ideologies, approval from society. These offer comforting scripts, ways to avoid the burden of creating meaning for ourselves. But Camus argued that to live authentically, we must rebel against the absurd. We must reject the ready-made answers, accept the silence of the universe, and still choose to live with passion and integrity. That rebellion is an act of freedom. When you tie together Sartre, Kierkegaard, and Camus, you see a common theme. Freedom is inescapable, freedom is frightening, and freedom is the essence of what it means to be human. But here's where it connects to the trap of approval. Living authentically in your freedom means making choices that others may not understand, or may even reject. it means risking disapproval, misunderstanding, and judgment. If you live only to be approved of, you are never truly free. You're outsourcing your freedom to others. Their expectations become your script, their opinions become your law. But existentialists argue that this is nothing more than bad faith. Sartre described bad faith as the lie we tell ourselves when we pretend we are not free, when we act as though we are victims of circumstance or bound by forces beyond our control. Living for approval is one of the clearest forms of bad faith. It's saying, I can't choose for myself, I must be what others want me to be. To break free from this, you must embrace authenticity instead of validation. Authenticity doesn't mean reckless self-expression or ignoring everyone around you. It means aligning your choices with your true values, even when they conflict with the crowd's expectations. It means recognizing that you cannot avoid freedom, so you might as well own it. It means standing in the dizziness of possibility and saying, I will choose for myself. And it means accepting that with this choice comes risk, the risk of rejection, the risk of loneliness, the risk of failure. But those risks are the price of real existence. Think of how many people stay in careers they despise because of approval. They tell themselves they have no choice, but in truth, they do. They could walk away, but they fear the judgment of family or society. So they bury their freedom under excuses, choosing validation over authenticity. Or consider relationships. How many remain in hollow partnerships, terrified of being single, terrified of disappointing parents, terrified of being judged by peers? Again, they tell themselves they can't, when in reality they are free, but unwilling to bear the burden of freedom. The existentialist would say that such a life is not truly lived. It is merely acted, a performance stage for others. What does authenticity look like then? It looks like choosing to act from your own center, not from the shifting tides of opinion. It looks like writing the book you want to write, even if no one reads it. It looks like pursuing the career that aligns with your values, even if it doesn't impress relatives at family gatherings. It looks like dressing in a way that feels right to you, not to the imaginary critics in your head. Authenticity requires courage, because it often means standing alone. But that solitude is the birthplace of strength. Camus once said, "The only way to deal with an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion." When you stop chasing validation, when you start choosing your life based on truth rather than approval, you become that act of rebellion. You're no longer a puppet dancing for the crowd's applause. You are a human being, standing tall in your own freedom. And yes, people may hate you for it. They may reject you, misunderstand you, or even mock you. But in that moment, you will know a deeper freedom, the freedom of not being owned. The burden of freedom is heavy, but it is also the path to authenticity. Approval offers the illusion of safety, but it robs you of your selfhood. Validation is addictive, but it leaves you hollow. Freedom demands courage, but it gives you back your soul. Kierkegaard, Sartre, and Camus were all telling us the same thing in different ways. You are free, whether you like it or not. Stop hiding from that truth. Stop living for approval. Stand in the dizziness. Rebel against the absurd and choose to live authentically. That is the burden. That is the danger. But it is also the only way to truly exist. Authentic freedom sounds noble in theory, but in practice it comes with a price. The moment you stop living for approval and start living authentically, you will collide with resistance. Not everyone will celebrate your courage. In fact, many will hate you for it. To be free is to break the invisible contract of conformity, and that act threatens the fragile balance that holds groups together. Society depends on people following rules, speaking the same language, and obeying shared customs. When someone dares to step outside of that, it unsettles the group. It forces them to face their own compromises, their own fears, their own hidden desire to break free. And rather than admire the rebel, people often choose the safer route. They condemn, ridicule, and try to drag them back into the fold. This resistance is not random, it is deeply psychological. Humans cling to order because order provides security. When someone challenges that order by refusing to play the game, it feels like a threat, not just to the system, but to the people who have built their lives on following the rules. Nonconformity becomes a mirror. It reflects back the possibility that maybe the rules are not absolute, maybe the sacrifices were unnecessary, maybe the whole structure is more fragile than it seems. And that realization is uncomfortable. So instead of questioning themselves, people turn their discomfort outward and direct hostility toward the one who dared to be different. History gives us countless examples of this pattern. Socrates, one of the founders of Western philosophy, was sentenced to death for corrupting the youth of Athens. His real crime was encouraging people to think for themselves rather than blindly follow tradition. Jesus was rejected, mocked, and ultimately crucified, not because he was cruel or violent, but because he challenged the religious and political order of his time. Friedrich Nietzsche was dismissed as insane and dangerous, even though his writings were decades ahead of his age. And Diogenes, the cynic who lived in a barrel and mocked the powerful, was treated as a madman rather than a teacher. Each of these figures chose authenticity over approval, and each paid a heavy price for it. Yet their ideas lived on, precisely because they were rooted in truth. Nietzsche put it bluntly, "The individual has always had to struggle to keep from being overwhelmed by the tribe. This struggle is eternal. The tribe, whether it is a community, a culture, or the faceless crowd of online opinion, demands obedience. It rewards those who conform and punishes those who stand apart. To remain an individual requires a kind of stubborn courage, the willingness to endure ridicule and misunderstanding rather than surrender your soul. Without this courage, the tribe absorbs you. You become just another face in the crowd, another voice echoing the same slogans, another life wasted in imitation." The hostility toward nonconformity has not disappeared in the modern world. It has simply taken new forms. Cancel culture, for example, shows how quickly the crowd can turn on those who step outside accepted narratives. Online shaming allows millions of strangers to attack a person within hours, stripping them of dignity, reputation, or livelihood. Peer pressure still operates in schools and workplaces, pushing people to act against their values for fear of exclusion. Even family expectations can function as a form of soft hostility. Parents or relatives who guilt, shame, or withhold love when someone dares to take a different path. Each of these is a modern expression of the same old truth. Authentic freedom unsettles others, and the response is often rejection. But here's the paradox. To live authentically, you must accept this hostility. You must cultivate the courage to be hated. Without it, you will forever bend under the weight of opinion. Courage here doesn't mean aggression or arrogance. It doesn't mean seeking conflict or trying to shock people for attention. It means standing firm in who you are, even when others disapprove. It means enduring rejection without crumbling, criticism without surrender, misunderstanding without self-betrayal. True courage is quiet but unyielding. It is the inner strength that allows you to walk alone if necessary, rather than betray your own truth for the comfort of being liked. Psychologically, hostility toward the authentic often reveals more about the critic than the target. People who project anger or ridicule onto nonconformists are often dealing with their own insecurities. When someone refuses to play by the rules, it exposes the compromises others have made to fit in. It reminds them of dreams they abandoned, values they silenced, risks they never took. Instead of facing that regret, they lash out. The rebel becomes a scapegoat for their discomfort. Understanding this can help you see criticism differently, not as a reflection of your failure, but as evidence of your freedom. Consider the life of an artist. Many of the most celebrated creators, Van Gogh, Kafka, Emily Dickinson, were ignored, mocked, or misunderstood in their lifetimes. Their work did not fit the mold of what the crowd approved, but they continued anyway, not because they enjoyed rejection, but because they could not betray their vision. Today, their names are remembered, while the voices of their critics are forgotten. This is the long arc of authenticity. In the moment, it provokes hostility, but in time it becomes a beacon for others. In your own life, the stakes may not be as dramatic as Socrates or Van Gogh, but the principle is the same. If you choose authenticity, if you choose the career that fulfills you instead of the one that pleases your family, if you express your beliefs honestly instead of echoing the crowd, if you live in a way that reflects your truth, you will face resistance. People may mock you. They may call you selfish, foolish, or naive. They may withdraw approval or even sever ties. But if you lack the courage to endure this, you will remain trapped in their shadow, never knowing the fullness of your own existence. The application here is simple but difficult. Practice the courage to be disliked. Start small if you need to. Speak an unpopular opinion in a group. Say no to a demand that doesn't align with your values. Post something online that reflects your real thoughts instead of what you think will earn likes. Notice how discomfort rises when approval is withheld, and resist the urge to retreat. Each act builds strength. Each moment of endurance expands your freedom. The goal is not to seek hatred, but to stop fearing it. Authentic freedom will always provoke hostility. That is the cost. But it is also the proof that you are alive, that you are no longer bound by invisible chains. To live in constant approval is to live as a shadow. To live with the courage to be hated is to step into the light of your own being. As Nietzsche warned, the tribe will always try to overwhelm the individual. The question is whether you have the strength to remain standing when the tribe turns against you. If you do, then you will know a freedom that few ever taste, the dangerous, exhilarating freedom of being real. Human beings are social creatures, and to survive in a world filled with rules, expectations, and constant judgment, we learn very early to wear masks. These masks are not literal, of course, but psychological. They are roles we step into, ways of presenting ourselves that make us more acceptable to others. Carl Jung, the Swiss psychologist, called this the persona. The word itself comes from the Latin for mask, the kind an actor would wear on stage. Jung saw the persona as the version of ourselves that we show to society, the carefully managed face designed to gain approval, avoid conflict, and meet expectations. On the surface, the persona seems useful, even necessary. Without it, we might struggle to function in the collective world. But the danger comes when the mask no longer feels like a mask. When we wear it for so long, we begin to forget there was ever a real face beneath it. Think about how this plays out in daily life. A person might step into the mask of the responsible professional at work, speaking in ways that project confidence even when they feel uncertain inside. At home, they might shift into the mask of the perfect partner or the obedient child, suppressing their frustrations to maintain peace. Among friends, they might wear the mask of the funny one, keeping everyone entertained while hiding deeper sadness. These masks are not always malicious. They allow us to navigate complex social worlds. But if we depend on them too heavily, we risk losing touch with our authentic self. We start believing we are the mask, and when that happens, our lives are no longer truly ours. They become performances scripted by the need for approval. The danger of this can be subtle but profound. For example, someone might convince themselves that they enjoy a career path chosen for them by family or society, when in truth, they feel suffocated by it. Day after day, they put on the mask of competence, the mask of ambition, and smile through meetings while their inner voice grows weaker. Or consider relationships. How many people stay in partnerships not out of love, but out of fear of judgment if they leave? They perform the role of happy partner at dinners and social events, while inside they feel empty or even resentful. In both cases, the persona is at work. The mask of approval conceals the authentic self, and over time, the line between the two blurs. This problem is not new. The Taoist philosopher Zhuangzi, who lived in ancient China, expressed it in his famous story of the butterfly dream. One night he dreamed he was a butterfly, fluttering freely in the air. When he woke up, he wondered, was he Zhuangzi who dreamed he was a butterfly, or a butterfly now dreaming he was Zhuangzi? The story is often interpreted as a meditation on identity, how fragile, fluid, and uncertain it can be. When we live through masks, the same question arises, who are we really? Are we the person we show to others, or the being hidden underneath, rarely seen? When the mask becomes too convincing, it's easy to lose track of the answer. The approval trap makes this problem worse. The more we depend on others for validation, the more masks we must create. Instead of living from the inside out, we live from the outside in, sculpting our persona according to what will be praised, liked, or admired. Over time, our lives can start to feel strangely hollow. We may achieve what others call success, yet feel deeply disconnected from ourselves. This is why so many people reach the top of careers, relationships, or social hierarchies only to find themselves asking, "Is this all there is?" They have mastered the art of the mask but forgotten the reality of the self. One way to begin breaking this cycle is to practice noticing the moments when you act for approval rather than truth. This requires honesty because the mask is slippery. It often disguises itself as common sense, duty, or politeness. But if you pay attention, you can begin to see the difference. When you agree to something you don't want, is it because you truly value harmony or because you fear disapproval? When you laugh at a joke that offends you, is it genuine or is it the mask of belonging? When you stay silent in a conversation, is it out of respect or out of fear of being judged? Each of these small moments reveals how much of your life is lived in performance. A practical exercise is to keep a simple journal for 1 week, noting down instances where you notice yourself putting on a mask. Don't judge yourself, just observe. Write down the situation, what you did, and what you actually felt inside. Over time, patterns will emerge. You might notice that with certain people, co-workers, family, friends, you always fall back into the same mask. You may realize that entire areas of your life are structured around persona rather than authenticity. The point of the exercise is not to rip off every mask immediately. That would be overwhelming. The point is to become conscious of them, to start separating the persona from the self. Self-development in this sense is not about becoming someone new, but about removing what is false. It is about peeling away the masks one by one, until what remains is the authentic self that no longer needs approval to exist. This process is slow, and it requires courage. Masks are safe. They protect us from conflict and rejection. To remove them is to risk being seen, and being seen means being vulnerable. But it also means being real. And only the real self can ever find genuine freedom, love, and fulfillment. The journey of removing masks is one of the hardest and most important paths in life. It may mean disappointing people who only loved your persona, not your truth. It may mean changing careers, ending relationships, or redefining yourself in ways that unsettle others. But the alternative is far worse: to live your whole life in costume, applauded by the crowd, yet never truly known, not even by yourself. Jung warned that when the persona becomes too strong, the authentic self slips into the unconscious, and the result is a life of quiet despair. To avoid that fate, you must risk peeling off the mask. If Zhuangzi's dream reminds us of the uncertainty of identity, Jung's concept of the persona reminds us of its danger. We can dream so convincingly that we lose sight of who we are when we wake. The task of philosophy and self-development is to wake up, to ask the uncomfortable questions, and to choose truth over performance. The crowd will always encourage masks, because masks are easy to approve of. But real growth requires honesty, and honesty cannot breathe under a mask. In the end, the courage to live authentically begins with the simple act of noticing. Notice when you are performing. Notice when you are silencing yourself. Notice when your choices are more about approval than truth. Each moment of awareness is like a crack in the mask, a reminder that there is someone underneath worth discovering. With time, the cracks grow wider, the mask weakens, and the self begins to emerge. And when it does, you may find that you don't need as much approval as you once thought. You may find that the freedom of being real, though dangerous, is worth more than the safety of being liked. When we think about rebellion today, we often picture protests, revolutions, or political uprisings. But long before those movements, there was a different kind of rebellion, one that didn't rely on armies, speeches, or banners. It was the rebellion of a single individual who chose to live outside of society's expectations, exposing its absurdities simply by refusing to play along. This was the rebellion of the cynics, and at the heart of it stood one of the most outrageous and uncompromising figures in history, Diogenes of Sinope. Diogenes was not like the philosophers who taught in elegant schools or wrote polished works for posterity. He lived in a barrel, or more accurately, a large clay jar, on the streets of Athens. He owned almost nothing, carried only a cloak and a staff, and relied on scraps of food or the charity of others to survive. To most Athenians, he looked like a beggar, a madman, or a nuisance. But beneath this rough exterior was a radical thinker who rejected the entire framework of social life. While other philosophers debated about abstract theories, Diogenes lived his philosophy in full view of the public. His message was simple: society's rules, customs, and hierarchies are illusions, and to live freely, one must strip them away. The most famous story about Diogenes involves his encounter with Alexander the Great. Alexander, who at the time was the most powerful man in the known world, approached Diogenes while he was sunbathing. With a mixture of curiosity and condescension, Alexander asked if there was anything he could do for the philosopher. Diogenes looked at the ruler of nations and replied, "Yes, stand out of my sunlight." In that single moment, he revealed something profound. Even a man who commanded armies and ruled vast territories had no real power over him. Alexander could take lives, conquer lands, and command obedience, but he could not give Diogenes anything he truly needed. Freedom for Diogenes meant needing nothing from the approval or generosity of others, not even from a king. The philosophy of cynicism was built on this principle of radical independence. Unlike other schools of thought that sought to improve society, the cynics openly mocked it. They refused to play status games, ridiculed luxury, and saw conventions like wealth, reputation, and even elaborate manners as empty distractions. To them, the path to freedom was not found in rising higher within the social order, but in stepping outside of it altogether. The word cynic itself comes from the Greek kynikos, meaning dog-like. They embraced this insult, living shamelessly, free from society's pretenses. Like dogs, they lived according to nature, not according to human opinion. Living according to nature was the cynic ideal. It meant stripping life down to its simplest necessities and rejecting everything artificial. Food, shelter, water, and honest living were enough. Anything beyond that, fine clothes, gold, prestige, was unnecessary baggage. By refusing these, they demonstrated a freedom that society couldn't touch. This was not a freedom handed down by laws or rulers, but a freedom rooted in self-sufficiency. If you need nothing, no one can control you. If your happiness does not depend on approval, wealth, or recognition, then society has no power over your soul. One of Diogenes' most famous acts was wandering through Athens in broad daylight with a lantern. When asked what he was doing, he replied, "I'm looking for an honest man." It was both a joke and a scathing critique. He was mocking the dishonesty and hypocrisy of society, how people wear masks, hide behind appearances, and live for approval rather than truth. His lantern was a symbol exposing how rare authenticity really is. In a city filled with wealth, art, and politics, he suggested that honesty was the rarest treasure of all. What would it mean to live like Diogenes today? Clearly, very few people are going to abandon their homes and live in barrels, but the spirit of cynicism is not about literal imitation. It is about recognizing the chains of convention and daring to live without them. In our world, those chains are everywhere. Consumer culture that tells us our worth depends on what we own, social media that measures value in likes and followers, career paths designed to impress rather than fulfill. To live like Diogenes today would mean cutting through these pretenses. It would mean recognizing that true freedom doesn't come from climbing the ladder, but from stepping off it. Imagine someone who rejects the constant hunger for new gadgets and clothes, who chooses simplicity over endless consumption. That person is practicing cynicism. Imagine someone who refuses to sculpt their life around Instagram likes, who shares only what feels genuine rather than what will be approved. That too is cynicism. Imagine someone who walks away from a high-paying job they hate, despite the disapproval of family or society, in order to pursue something truer to themselves. That is Diogenes' spirit alive in the modern world. Of course, this kind of rebellion comes with discomfort. Diogenes was ridiculed and mocked, just as anyone who defies social expectations today risks criticism. But this is precisely the point. Approval is the currency of conformity. If you want to live authentically, you must be willing to devalue that currency, to let go of the need to be admired. Diogenes' life was an exaggerated performance of this truth. By pushing society's disapproval to its limits, he revealed how meaningless that disapproval really was. In a way, Diogenes' radical life serves as a mirror. He forces us to ask, how much of what we do is real, and how much is performance? How much of our identity is shaped by genuine values, and how much is just borrowed from the crowd? His lantern is still relevant today. We might laugh at the image of a man searching for honesty in the middle of the day, but if we held up that lantern to our own lives, what would we find? Would we see authenticity, or only layers of masks and roles built for approval? The application is not to abandon everything, but to begin peeling away what is unnecessary. It means asking, what do I truly need? What conventions am I following only for the sake of appearances? Where am I enslaved to approval? The cynic rebellion reminds us that much of what we chase is a distraction. Freedom comes not from gaining more, but from needing less. Each time you reject a false value, whether it's the pursuit of likes, the race for status, or the pressure to consume, you reclaim a piece of your freedom. Diogenes may have lived in a barrel, but his real dwelling was independence. His rebellion wasn't against specific rulers or laws, but against the deeper tyranny of opinion and convention. That rebellion is just as relevant now as it was in ancient Athens. In a world drowning in noise, performance, and consumption, the Cynic spirit offers a radical reminder. You don't need their approval. You don't need their applause. You are free the moment you stop playing their game. At some point in every person's life, there comes a quiet but decisive moment. It may not happen in a dramatic way. It could be as subtle as a thought before bed, a feeling in your chest during a meeting, or the sense of emptiness after following a path that was never really yours. That moment is the realization that you have a choice to make. Will you continue living for approval, or will you live authentically? This is not a small decision. It is the great life choice, one that separates a life spent in imitation from a life that is genuinely your own. Søren Kierkegaard, the Danish philosopher, described something he called the leap of faith. For him, this leap was about choosing to ground your life in something deeper than the crowd, something more authentic than the shifting winds of opinion. Kierkegaard saw that the crowd always offers ready-made answers. Tradition, conformity, the comfort of being like everyone else. But if you follow the crowd, you dissolve into it. To truly exist, you must take a leap into yourself. This leap of faith is not about rejecting other people completely, but about daring to choose your own path, even if it sets you apart. It is the decision to say, I will no longer live as a copy of others, I will choose myself. Albert Camus, in his own way, spoke of a similar rebellion. For Camus, life is absurd. There is no cosmic script handed to us, no divine order that guarantees meaning. Many people, when faced with this, surrender to illusions, systems of belief or approval that give them the illusion of purpose. But Camus believed the honest response to absurdity was rebellion, not rebellion in the sense of destruction or violence, but rebellion as integrity. To live authentically is to stare into the silence of the universe, accept that there is no guarantee of meaning, and still choose to live truthfully, passionately, and without pretense. It is refusing to surrender your life to the crowd's illusions, even when those illusions would make things easier. The Cynics expressed this authenticity in their own radical style. They believed in honesty without shame, in simplicity without pretense, in a life lived openly according to nature. Diogenes, for example, shocked Athenians not just with his words but with his way of living, refusing conventions, ignoring status games, and embodying shameless independence. While few of us are called to that extreme, the lesson remains powerful. Authenticity is not about decorating your mask. It is about removing it altogether. It is about living so directly from your truth that approval becomes irrelevant. Living authentically doesn't mean rejecting everyone or cutting yourself off from the world. That would be another kind of prison. What it means is refusing to be enslaved to opinions, whether they are positive or negative. Approval should not be the currency by which you measure your worth. Instead, authenticity asks you to ground your life in your own values. And the first step toward that is learning to distinguish between what is truly yours and what has been borrowed from others. A practical way to begin is through journaling. Set aside time to write down the values that guide your life. At first, you may find yourself listing things that sound good or socially acceptable. Success, stability, kindness, achievement. But the deeper question to ask is, where did these values come from? Are they truly yours, or were they handed to you by family, culture, peers, or social media? Write them down in two columns, my real values and borrowed values. Be honest, you may find that much of what drives your life has been borrowed. This is not a failure, it is the beginning of clarity. Once you see what isn't truly yours, you can start to let it go. Another powerful practice is learning to say no. Many people live lives filled with obligations that do not reflect their true desires or values, simply because they are afraid to disappoint others. Saying yes becomes the default, and over time, resentment builds. Authentic living requires the courage to decline expectations that don't align with who you are. This doesn't mean being harsh or unkind. It means respecting yourself enough to not give your life away for approval. Every time you say no to what isn't yours, you're saying yes to yourself. Equally important is practicing small risks of honesty. You don't need to overhaul your entire life in one dramatic gesture. Authenticity can be built one step at a time. Try speaking your mind in a conversation where you would normally stay silent. Share an idea or a piece of work that feels personal, even if it might be judged. Dress in a way that feels right to you, even if it's not what others expect. These small acts build strength, and over time they create a life where your choices reflect who you are, not who others want you to be. This process is not always easy. There will be resistance, both from within and from others. Internally, you will feel fear, because approval has been your safety net for so long. Externally, others may criticize or withdraw their support, because your authenticity challenges the roles they expect you to play. But if you stay committed, something remarkable happens. The more you live authentically, the less approval you need. You begin to realize that the world doesn't collapse when you are disliked, that rejection is survivable, and that the reward of authenticity is worth the cost. Authenticity also transforms the quality of your relationships. When you stop living for approval, the people who remain close to you are those who value you for who you truly are. This may mean losing some connections, but what remains will be deeper and more real. Instead of being surrounded by people who love your mask, you will begin to attract those who resonate with your truth. In this way, authenticity is not just about self-liberation. It is about creating a more honest and meaningful life with others. Living authentically is not a one-time choice, but a daily practice. Every day you are presented with moments where you must choose: approval or truth, mask or self, conformity or freedom. Most of the time, the temptation will be to choose approval. It feels easier, safer, more comfortable. But the cost of that comfort is your life. If you choose authenticity, the path will be harder at first, but each step strengthens your freedom. Kierkegaard's leap of faith, Camus' rebel, the cynic's shameless honesty, all point to the same conclusion. Authenticity is not about escaping freedom, it is about owning it fully. In the end, authenticity is not about rejecting everyone else. It's about no longer being enslaved to their opinions. You can still love people, still connect, still participate in society, but you do it from a place of freedom, not from a desperate hunger for validation. You are no longer a performer on the stage of approval. You are the author of your own script. And that shift, though dangerous, is the only way to truly live. Living authentically has always been difficult, but in the modern world the challenge is sharper than ever. In the past, approval was something that came from the immediate circle around you, your family, your neighbors, your village. Today, approval is crowdsourced. Social media has turned identity into a public marketplace, where likes, shares, and comments serve as constant signals of who we are and whether we are acceptable. Culture now functions like a giant mirror, reflecting back to us not who we are, but who we are supposed to be. With every scroll, we see models of success, happiness, or beauty that we are invited to copy. And with every post, we are tempted to craft ourselves as a product, optimized for attention. This constant performance makes it nearly impossible to separate the self from the mask. If you are not careful, you begin to live as a brand rather than a person. You shape your experiences not for their intrinsic worth, but for their shareability. Vacations become photo opportunities, meals become aesthetic content. Even private feelings get filtered into polished captions. In this environment, authenticity becomes radical. To live without the constant hunger for approval is not just unusual, it is revolutionary. That's why reclaiming solitude and self-respect is so crucial today. Solitude gives you a space where no one is watching, where you can breathe without an audience. It allows you to hear your own voice beneath the roar of the crowd. Self-respect grows when you learn to value your own judgment as much as the opinions of others. And the right to be disliked, perhaps the most difficult of all, frees you from the invisible chains of expectation. If you can accept that not everyone will approve, then suddenly their disapproval loses its power. You no longer have to live in fear of rejection because rejection has become survivable. The contrast here is sharp. Approval chasing offers safety, but it is the safety of slavery. When you live for the crowd's applause, you trade away your freedom for comfort. You become predictable, easy to control, shaped by what others demand. Authenticity, on the other hand, feels dangerous. It risks misunderstanding, criticism, even hostility. But that danger is also its strength. It is the danger of being real, of walking without a script, of stepping into the open with nothing but yourself. Approval is a cage dressed as comfort. Authenticity is a storm that feels frightening but opens up the sky. So how do we practice this dangerous freedom in the modern world? One way is to take a digital detox, even if only for short periods. Social media amplifies the approval trap like nothing else, constantly feeding us comparisons and inviting us to measure our worth in numbers. By stepping away, turning off notifications, taking breaks from posting or setting limits, you can reclaim your attention and stop living as a product. You might feel uneasy at first, as if you are missing out, but what you are really doing is detoxing from the drug of approval. Over time, you may find that life without constant feedback is calmer, clearer, and more alive. Another practice is voluntary discomfort, a kind of modern cynic training. Diogenes and the cynics deliberately lived in ways that stripped away luxury and approval. They slept outdoors, wore simple clothes, and endured mockery. You don't need to copy this exactly, but you can adopt the spirit. Try leaving the house without makeup or dressing in a way that feels comfortable but not impressive. Try sitting in silence without reaching for your phone. Try saying no to an unnecessary purchase and seeing what it feels like to resist consumer culture. These small acts of discomfort remind you that you don't need constant approval, luxury, or conformity to survive. They build resilience and remind you of your independence. A third practice is existential journaling. Set aside time to write honestly about your life, but with one guiding question: what do I choose if I stop seeking approval? This question is powerful because it cuts straight to the heart of the problem. It bypasses the masks and the expectations and forces you to face yourself. You may discover that many of your current choices, your career, your habits, your goals, are shaped less by what you value and more by what earns approval. This realization can be uncomfortable, but it can also be liberating. Once you see the chains, you can begin to loosen them. Each entry becomes a rehearsal for freedom, a way of practicing the courage to choose yourself. The beauty of these exercises is that they don't require you to overthrow your entire life in one dramatic moment. They are small but radical shifts, each one pulling you closer to authenticity. Over time, they retrain your mind to stop craving approval and start seeking truth. They teach you that freedom doesn't come from being liked. It comes from being honest, and honesty, once tasted, is difficult to surrender. Dangerous freedom in the modern world means daring to live as more than a brand, more than a product, more than a mask. It means carving out solitude in a noisy culture, choosing integrity over likes, and being willing to disappoint others if it means remaining true to yourself. It is not easy, it is not comfortable, but it is the only way to reclaim your life from the crowd. Albert Camus captured this spirit perfectly when he wrote, "The only way to deal with an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion." In today's approval-driven culture, authenticity itself is rebellion. To live truthfully is to resist the pressure to perform. To choose yourself is to reject the cage of conformity. And to accept the danger of being disliked is to step into the only freedom that is real.